Hi again, everybody, and welcome to Amran's Podcast, episode 116. It's Friday, September 26th, 2008. And joining me today is one of my internet buddies, Mark from Slap Upside the Head. Welcome back, Mark.
Thanks for having me.
Now, you were last here, actually, I looked it up, because I didn't remember, on episode 51, which was in November of 2007. So it's been a while.
Almost a year, yeah.
Well, as it happens, both our countries are in the midst of election campaigns. What date is the Canadian election?
October 14th.
And how's...
2008, which is significant since I think legally we're not supposed to have one until 2009 right now, but maybe I'll get into that a little later.
Now, as I understand it, there was a bit of controversy about that because the elections were supposed to be held on the same day or the same week or something like that every time that there was an election. Now, what was that all about? Something about the government moved the date of the election or something?
Well, Stephen Harper, our current prime minister, had introduced a law saying that elections would be held every 4 years, much like it is in the United States. The idea of being in parliament, often the party that's in power will end up calling an election whenever they're the most popular, even if it's earlier. So you get parties that look at the polls, say, oh, we're popular, we'll hold an election, and that gives them at least another 4 or 5 years. I actually forget what the maximum term is because we haven't had that for quite some time now. This is, I believe they said it's the fourth election in 5 years, or maybe it was the third, or I completely lost track. It's really pretty nuts, but this is actually the first election we've had in about 2.5 years now, because the last one was in 2006. But yeah, he had introduced this law and passed it, so we were not supposed to have an election until 2009. I really don't know why he decided to call one earlier, saying that there was an emergency in Parliament, that it had become dysfunctional, and that we needed an election right now, which I don't buy at all. But he said he's not breaking his law because it doesn't apply to minority governments, which he has, even though that wasn't written anywhere in the law. It's just kind of, I think he's winging it, just justifying it somehow. But yeah, what can I say? It seems to be working. They're still leading in the polls.
Well, that could be the real reason why he called the election. I had read somewhere that the law requiring the election to be held every 4 years or whatever didn't prevent the prime minister from calling an early election if they felt they needed to for some reason, which I guess is what you're talking about there, where he felt that he wanted to go to the polls, and so he called an early election and made up an excuse.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, though. As soon as you allow for something like that, the excuse can be, ostensibly you can say because its parliament is dysfunctional. But frankly, I don't think anyone bought that. It's been exactly how it's been for the past 2.5 years. You know, we've had a conservative minority government. In any minority government, you know, the opposition is going to be stalling and is going to be bringing in more debate about bills that the government wants passed. I don't think that's signaling that it's dysfunctional. In fact, I think that's probably the most functional way to have a government. But what can you say? The prime minister obviously disagrees, and we're in the middle of an election. One other thing about the timing of the election call, though, it was somewhat significant for me because the day of the election call was supposed to be a by-election in my riding. So there was a federal seat up for grabs. My current MP had retired or left. I'm not entirely sure why. So there had been election signs up everywhere. People had got the cards. People had gone to the advanced polls and voted. And then this election call came up, and that was all canceled. And it's very unusual, I would say, for the prime minister to announce by-elections only to override them later, because it's costly. Elections cost a lot of money, taxpayer money, of course. So I really don't understand what the emergency was between the time that these by-elections were announced and the actual election was called.
And I probably should say, for the benefit of listeners who don't know, a riding is in other jurisdictions called an electorate or a district or something like that. Basically, it's a geographic area that's represented by the MP, right?
Yes, that's exactly right.
different countries call them different things. I can't actually remember what they're called in Australia. I think I don't know what they're called, actually.
Yeah, I really don't know.
I've only heard the MPs referred to as the member for such and such.
Yeah, yeah.
Which we don't do in New Zealand. They're usually called, what are they? They just list the electorate that they're from, if they're an electorate MP. Which is actually, of course, sort of segue to a major difference between New Zealand and Canada. Well, there are probably two main differences in the parliamentary systems. First of all, New Zealand has a unicameral parliament, one house, and of course Canada has two. But the other is that New Zealand has a proportional voting system, whereas Canada still uses the first past the post. Now,
I'm so jealous.
Our system is MMP, and I just discussed this on a podcast earlier this week. And the advantage of any proportional system, whether it's MMP or a different one, is that the will of the electorate is theoretically reflected in Parliament, because they determine how they want the Parliament made up, and they're going to get it no matter what. whereas under first-past-the-post system, it just matters who wins the largest number of electorates or ridings or districts or whatever you want to call it. To get the biggest number of MPs in the House. But it doesn't seem like the idea of proportional representation has been catching on very much in Canada. I mean, Ontario rejected MMP.
Yes, and BC as well. They had tried a variation on STV, or a single transferable vote. They call it BC STV, which I'm actually a huge fan of, and I would like to see it implemented everywhere, but they rejected it. It needed a 60% vote to pass, and it had something like 57.8.
Oh, no.
It was very, very close. So they're actually going to do it again in 2009. They're going to put it back on the ballot. And hopefully by then enough education has gone out about what this is and why it's good that it might be implemented. But there's been no talk about it federally, at least not in any of the major parties. I think the Green Party, I saw a news clip where Elizabeth May, the leader of the Green Party, had been talking about proportional representation and how that would be good for her party. But, of course, anyone who aspires to have a majority government is going to be opposed to proportional representation because it almost guarantees that that will never happen.
Yeah.
You know, with a certain number of parties, we have, I would say, five main ones now in Canada, or at least five ones that have seats. And you know, with that many choices, it's rare that any party is going to get the 154 seats necessary to form a majority government.
Yeah.
But again, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think minority governments are where you get the most discussion, you know, where the actual most gets done, as opposed to just, you know, blanket go through whatever the majority government wants.
Well, in New Zealand, we don't generally referred to them as minority governments so much as coalition governments. And what that essentially means is that there's one party that dominates the coalition. In New Zealand's case, for the past 9 years, it's been the New Zealand Labour Party. And they form coalitions with some of the minor parties in order to be able to form government. And generally, that means that somebody from the other party will get some portfolio. In the case of the current government, there was a member of one minor party who was made something to do with taxes or something like that. I can't even remember. Revenue minister, that's what it was, which hadn't existed before, actually. And the leader of another party was made foreign minister outside of cabinet, which is really unusual. For people who don't know parliamentary systems, the foreign minister is usually one of the inner circles with the prime minister and is a member of cabinet. And which is like sort of like the what would you call it exactly, the subunit of government that actually runs the show, I suppose.
It's just, I don't know, my vision is always, it's funny with the Harper government, I really can't name too many of the cabinet ministers, but they're the people that seem to be responsible for a lot of the I would say policies in categories.
Now, for the sake of argument, let's just suppose that the polls are correct and Harper's government is returned to power, either as a minority or as a majority. And let's suppose that Obama does win the presidency in November in the U.S. How is he going to be able to relate to a government that's dominated by a party that he doesn't have a lot in common with.
Well, one of the things, though, I have to say, in Canada, we don't really have any party much like the Republicans in the States. I would say Harper is trying to make his party seem more like the Democrats. I don't think that's true. I mean, the U.S. Democrats. I do think that we're more, the conservative government up here is more right-wing, especially since it was formed from fragments of previously failed parties that were all right-wing, the Reform Party, the Progressive Conservatives. You know, they all tried numerous different names. My favorite was the Crap Party, or it was like the Canadian Reform Alliance Party. The acronym actually was CRAP. I think it just had two C's. Obviously, that didn't last long. But in general, because they still have a lot of the Reform influence, I think they are still quite right-wing, although they try to appeal, I guess, to the center voter by suggesting that they're more conservative in the traditional sense, which is promoting a smaller government, you know, allowing the provinces to have more power over their own affairs, that sort of thing. But in reality, I mean, especially with arts cuts and, you know, they seem to be meddling in more, I would say, things that do make a larger government, especially when they were talking about taking away marriage rights, which had already been won, and that was a province by province basis thing, and they wanted to ban it for everyone. I would say that's more in line with having a much larger government. So I don't quite buy that they're going for a smaller government.
Well, that's actually true with the Republicans in the U.S. as well. They have all, traditionally, the party has always been about smaller government and limited government. But over the past 8 years in particular, the party's been about nothing but making government bigger and stronger and more influential in people's private lives. And we've just seen that just in the past couple of weeks with the proposed bailout of Wall Street. It's basically about the federal government takeover of Wall Street, nationalizing some of the Wall Street interests. And that's not Republican policy.
Yeah, but, no, it's, I mean, I'm just kind of observing from afar in a sense, since I don't live there. But all of that, what you said sounds true. And it's a little confusing because, I mean, conservatism in general is supposed to be more about smaller governments, more personal freedom.
Yep.
And it's very surprising to see especially the socially conservative values that are just, you know, blanketing over everyone. You know, women are not allowed to choose. Gay people cannot be married. These are all very invasive personal restrictions on people's lives that I don't think is in line with any conservative value. So
yeah.
It's funny. But anyway, sorry, back to your original question was, would the Harper government be able to get along with an Obama, you know, government in the Democrats? You know, I'm not too sure. I think in some sense, the Democratic Party still isn't as left-leaning as, say, the Liberal Party is in Canada, or certainly the New Democratic Party and the Green. Well, the Green Party is still somewhat right-wing, but they're very, on social issues, they're still very much further to the left, and so is the Bloc, which is Quebec's separatist party. So I do think maybe that the Democrats have more in common with Canada's Conservative Party, maybe than some of the others, in the sense that, say, marriage equality is not officially on their party platform. You know, they still support the war in Afghanistan, although I understand not so much the war in Iraq. Those are the kind of things that the left-leaning parties up here don't support, and they actually put that in their platform. So, yeah, I think an Obama/Harper North America would probably probably still be pretty good.
Okay.
But probably not. Harper would probably be much happier with McCain if you were allowed to vote for him.
Well, it is an interesting and important thing, I think, that you said earlier as well about how Canada, just like New Zealand, doesn't have an equivalent of the Republican Party. The conservatives are different than American conservatives. Certainly in New Zealand, there are social conservatives, certainly, but they are on the fringes of the political system. The battle in New Zealand is over the center. The Labour Party is basically a slightly left-of-center party, and the National Party is a right-of-center party. But they're all fighting over the center, and there are parties out on the fringes that are either more to the left or more to the right, but they're not going to form, neither one of them is, none of those are ever going to form government. They probably won't even be in a position to support a government, truth be known. Apart, maybe, maybe the Greens could. It's hard to say. But I mean,
well,
just going to say, we've got a social neoconservative party as well, but they may not even be in the new parliament because of proportional representation.
Yeah. Well, and, you know, what you were saying kind of used to be the situation with the right here in Canada. Like I said, the current conservatives were really merged out of a bunch of smaller parties, the most right wing being the Reform Party, which mostly had support in Alberta. And they were very right wing, I would say, to the point where they were pretty close to the Republicans. And, you know, there had been MPs that were talking about introducing the death penalty and, you know, things that I would say would be very unpopular in Canada. But these MPs are still there within the Conservative Party. But the party image that they want to project is definitely more of a center image. So I would say the battle is probably over the center here, too. But the center in Canada might still be a little... I mean, center is always defined as center, but I would say that the popular, what people want in Canada, is still maybe a little more to the left of what's traditionally considered center. So there are certain things that the Conservatives would never want to put in their platform, such as outlawing abortion and, at least for this election, not outlawing equal marriage, mostly because those are here and they know that that would just bring a lot of controversy. Versus in the States, the Republicans, of course, they want a constitutional amendment banning gay marriage. You know, they want to, especially Sarah Palin, you know, not wanting to allow abortions under any circumstances, including very exceptional circumstances. Those kind of things you would never really see the official party pushing, at least not up here.
Yeah, I think that's true. And actually, I think that that's got a lot to do with why so many people in the U.S. see Canada as an island of tolerance, or I don't know, a safe haven to escape to, if if Palin and McCain do end up winning. I mean, there have been some even videos done about that. I sent you a link to one of them. I think it was part of a series called "Escape to Canada," which I haven't seen, so I don't know anything about it. But I don't know.
Yeah, no, I got the link. You know, I'd never heard of that it was a documentary or a series or something. I hadn't heard of it before. I did think it was kind of funny. I ended up watching one of the trailers for it on YouTube. But, you know, this is something that I think a lot of people say after every election. You know, when the Democrats were in power, Bill Clinton gets reelected. And, no, I guess they wouldn't move to Canada. But people are always talking about relocating if a certain government comes in power. And I really don't know how realistically that happens. I know when I heard about this the most, it would be, of course, if Bush were reelected, we'd all move to Canada. And I don't think realistically that happened a lot. And I think it is good to not necessarily escape your country because you don't like the government, because that's not going to help any of the issues. I'm not saying I wouldn't welcome anybody who wants to move here. I think that we have a fabulous country that I certainly really like living here. But this whole notion of Canada being this completely safe haven full of tolerance, you know, it wasn't always like that. There were not too long ago where the government was, certainly in my province of Alberta, had passed unconstitutional laws supported by something called the Notwithstanding Clause that specifically forbids same-sex marriage, even though the Constitution, or I guess our Charter of Rights, that's what we call it here, allowed for it. And that was not long ago. That was in 2000. It expired in 2005. And by 2006, the federal vote had overridden all of that. But, you know, these kind of rights and all this tolerance, that it came by fighting for it. And I think running away, especially if it's your home, you know, I'm sure it's frustrating voting for something that doesn't have majority support at the time. But that does change over time. People, you know, once they begin to understand the issues, they don't have as much of a fear of these sorts of changes.
Yeah. And it's actually also worth remembering. I mean, it seems like it's a good alternative if the wrong people win, but it's not as easy to move to another country as some people seem to think it is. It's not just that you pack up the U-Haul and drive across the border. There are certain niceties you have to take care of.
Changing citizenship. Well, I would imagine it's not too hard between Canada and the U.S., but certainly other countries, you know, that we don't have as strong a relationship with, it would be much harder. And even between the States and Canada, it's a lot of paperwork, a lot of legal filing, and, you know, you have to ensure that you're employable and all those sorts of things.
Yeah. Well, the same is true with New Zealand as well. As a matter of fact, it's harder to get in now than it was when I came here 13 years ago, or nearly 13 years ago. And of course, I wasn't fleeing political persecution either, so I had the benefit of time and all that. But basically, if people want to leave the U.S. or any other country for that matter, they have to think these things through and think about the implications and think about how they're going to do it. Because, you know, as I said, you can't just pack up the U-Haul and go. You've got to get the appropriate permits and all those sorts of things from whatever country you're planning on going to. Some are easier than others. I think that Canadians have a reasonably easy time emigrating to New Zealand. Actually, most people from Commonwealth countries seem to have an easier time than people from non-Commonwealth countries. It's not impossible, I guess is what I'm saying, but it's not as easy as some people seem to think it is.
Yeah. No, like you said, it's not just a pack up and move, last minute decision kind of thing.
Yeah. I actually sometimes wish that people in the U.S. understood more about the Commonwealth than they do, because just mentioned that. I would suspect that most Americans have no idea what it is. Every once in a while, I'll hear a reference to it on the news, and they almost invariably call it the British Commonwealth. And I thought, wow, that name's been gone for a long time.
Yeah, no, well, I mean, it's, I mean, of course, we all share the same queen, I suppose.
Yeah.
And, you know, the same history in that sense. But, yeah, no, British Commonwealth, I haven't heard for a long time.
No. Well, the second largest international sporting competition in the world is the Commonwealth Games, for instance. Yeah. And actually, there's talk that Auckland may put in a bid for that in, I've forgotten what year it is, but coming up, because we've got the Rugby World Cup in 2011. And so they're talking about putting in a bid for the Commonwealth Games as well.
Hmm.
There's no way we could ever get the Olympics, that's for sure.
I don't know. we at least have the Winter Olympics coming up here in 2010. We've had it before. I think it was in 1988 in Calgary, but summer, maybe not so much.
Yeah, well, it's cold in Canada all the time, isn't it?
Constantly, yeah. You should come visit my igloo one day. But,
well, we still
just
get
load up the parkas. You'll need at least 8.
Well, we still get people who think that we live in grass huts or something here. So. Actually, I made the mistake of telling somebody once. We had a house that here in Auckland, one of our former houses, that was on the side of a hill. It's quite a steep hill. And it was built on piles, but it was poles. I mean, most houses, I shouldn't say most, a great many houses in New Zealand are built on what we call piles, which are generally like giant tree trunks, except they're quite short. You know, it's no higher off the ground than a house built on a basement would be. But it actually makes sense in a geologically active country because wood can move and sway, whereas concrete tends to break.
Right.
So this makes a lot of sense. But I made the mistake of telling somebody that our house on the side of a hill was a pole house, which means it's much higher, and that's so that the front of the house can be at ground level, so you can get in easily, and the back of it is, well, geez, what was it, better part of 2 stories above ground level. And so that person kept talking about New Zealand houses being built on stilts. I said, no.
I have seen that, though, in areas that get a lot of flooding, they like to build the houses on stilts, so it's not unheard of, but yeah, no.
Well, there was that house in Texas that was up on sticks.
Sorry, I was just going to say, on the side of a hill really does sound like the whole New Zealand hobbit hole kind of thing.
Well, particularly in Auckland, because the Auckland region, is really quite hilly. There are other parts that aren't nearly so much. There's an area that's not far from Auckland called the Hauraki Plains, and we used to live in that general area. And the plains, I think, are actually 1 meter below sea level, if I remember correctly, or at sea level or something. At any rate, if there was a major event, like a, well, certainly a tsunami, but I'm thinking like a cyclone or something, that area would flood. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And a lot of people still build houses on concrete slabs on the ground. And I'm thinking, geez, people.
Yeah, well, they just hope it doesn't happen in their lifetime, well, I guess.
Exactly.
But statistically, it has to at some point. I mean, floodplains are just, they're called that for a reason. That's why they're so flat usually. So,
yeah. And we keep hearing about these once in 100-year weather events that are happening every few years now.
Yeah, funny, isn't that?
Yeah. Good thing there's no such thing as global warming, according to the Bush administration.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Well, there's one other thing I wanted to ask you about, because I've blogged about this, and I thought it'd be best to go to a Canadian about this. What's all this brouhaha about the Hockey Tonight theme?
Oh, yes. What had happened is, for years and years and years, CBC Hockey Night in Canada had a theme song that it's... I mean, everyone here knows it. I'm sure no one outside of Canada does. It's... As a kid, I always reminded me a lot of the He-Man song for some reason, just to give you an idea of what it might sound like. But for some reason, I'm not entirely sure why negotiations broke down with the copyright holder and CBC lost the rights to it. At first, one day, CBC just announced that they might not renew their contract, as if it was their decision and they're deciding, oh, it's time for something new. It was a huge, huge outrage. Which, you know, on one level is kind of funny, but at the same time, you know, there are a lot of memories, like I said, during my childhood, and you would just hear it every Sunday night. So people were very upset that this theme song might be going away. Eventually what happened is a competing station picked it up. Oddly enough, the day after CBC announced that it lost the rights, which makes me think that they had negotiations going all along with the copyright holder. But I had to enjoy, CBC is now holding a contest to replace the Hockey Night in Canada song, and people can submit their own entries. And for the longest time, I don't know if this is still the case, but the winning entry was this song, using air quotes, full of like gunshots and babies crying and cats. And, it was winning. I would have very much enjoyed to see that win, although I think in the end, the winning choice is chosen by a panel of judges. I don't think the user votes on the web really counted completely.
Well, that's good. And I'm glad that this is moving towards resolution, because the fate of the free world was hinging on it, I think. So,
Yeah, judging from the news stories, it was pretty funny, I have to say.
Well, I think that some of the people in the U.S. in particular were fascinated by the story. And as a matter of fact, I think I had emailed you about it, about some of the comments that were on YouTube when the story was first breaking. Some of the comments were just outrageous, like, oh, it's just a game, get over it. And I'm thinking, yeah, well, you people get obsessed with baseball and football and things. What's the difference?
Yeah, that's, you know, try moving football to like a Wednesday night and see how people react down there. It's, you know, it's one of those things, it's somewhat of an institution here, and it's people really, really follow hockey. And I mean, even though I don't, I have to admit, I get excited when it's all around me during the playoffs. There was, especially when I was in Calgary and they had made it all the way to the finals and very, very close to winning the Stanley Cup, which, I mean, unless, I don't know how big hockey is in the States, but it's the big North American Cup that everyone covets. And just, you know, everyone on the street is wearing the uniforms and everyone has these little flags on their cars. And it's very easy to get very excited about this. It's a big, big deal here. So when anything to do with hockey is changed, you know, people, they have a reason to be upset.
Well, I will say that when I was a kid growing up, it seemed like any time there was a hockey player on American television, they were speaking with a Canadian accent. But maybe that's just my imagination.
I don't know. Nowadays, it seems to be more Russian accents.
Well, that's probably people, true.
Yeah. It's kind of funny. I mean, this was never during my lifetime when players for a local team were all locals. But now I do think it's kind of funny for a city to get very passionate about their own team when really it's just made up from that the team captain can afford.
Yeah.
So.
Well, actually, it's a sort of similar situation here in New Zealand with rugby, which was long the national game. And now most teams are made up of people of Pacific Island origin. And There are, I suppose, some Māori as well, but there aren't necessarily quite as many people of European descent as there used to be. So when once it starts to change like that, you think, well, is it really New Zealand's national game anymore if they're, you know, importing these players from overseas to fill up the roster? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, Canada's national game, I mean, everyone, if you were to ask anyone on the street, they would say it's hockey. But I think for the longest time, it was lacrosse.
Really?
Which I still don't fully understand what that is, but I think recently hockey was also made the national sport. I don't know if this is just a rumor. I haven't really looked into it, but I think that's right, that our national sport is technically lacrosse for some reason.
I never would have guessed that.
Yeah, most people here wouldn't either.
Well, actually, you know, you mentioned about CBC, and I was just wondering if you had been aware at all of the controversy in the U.S., among the right wing anyway, about a Canadian columnist on the CBC site, apparently, who had written a column talking about Sarah Palin and white trash and something about porn. I didn't read the column, so I don't know what all it said. But the thing about it is that it got on Fox Noise, which is probably the so-called news source that I love to hate the most. And I cannot remember the woman's name. I think it's Greta or something. She was grilling a Canadian journalist from Ottawa, I think it was, and about this column. And he was basically agreeing with her, saying, look, this went a bit too far. It was a bit not right. But she was going on about the CBC and saying that the CBC was an ultra-leftist organization, which is typical for Fox Noise. If you ever listen to them, everything's ultra-leftist to them.
Yeah, well, you know, conservatives here complain about that too, that the CBC is supposedly this left-wing media that, you know, I don't see personally when I actually read the stories. They seem to be pretty unbiased. I haven't heard about the one that you were talking about. It really sounds like that would be more of an opinion column, so I don't think
it
would have been on the news. I think if you go like to the CBC site and read the comments at the bottom of the story, it's clear that the audience is mostly left-leaning. But the stories themselves, I think, are generally pretty unbiased. They're, you know, just how journalism is usually done. They're very matter-of-fact. And I do think, like, whenever I watch an interview with politicians, the CBC always seems to play devil's advocate in that if they're a left-wing politician, they will be attacking their policies as if, you know, the interviewer was someone on the right, and vice versa. If they're interviewing a right-wing politician, they'll usually bring up arguments from the left. I've never really seen a bias one way or the other, but then again, I don't watch a lot of TV, and I tend to read most of my news, so
yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I've gone to their site from time to time, and sometimes I've followed a link that's been slap upside the head, and I've certainly never perceived demonstrable bias. I mean, all journalists are biased to some extent. So, I mean, I sort of take that as a starting point. But I haven't seen them as having a, what's the word I'm looking for, a huge bias. They do seem to present things in a more or less matter-of-fact way, unlike, for instance, Fox Noise, which always puts things from a right-wing perspective, without exception and without fail.
Yeah, no, exactly. And in fact, if they ever present a left-wing observation, it seems to be all over the web. I don't know if you read dig.com or something, but if there's ever any time that Fox News presents something that's attacking the right, it instantly gets all this publicity. And it's very rare, I would say. It almost never happens.
Yeah. Well, I had the misfortune of channel surfing onto it the other day. And they had Newt Gingrich on, of all people. I mean, I despise Newt Gingrich. I think that he is probably responsible, more than any other living American, for the deep divisions between the parties that exist now when he launched his Contract on America. And he really raised party warfare to a high art form. But he was talking about this financial mess in the U.S., and he was really coming down hard on Bush and basically saying that Bush didn't know what he was doing, which I think is a fair enough assessment. On so many things. But the thing of it is, it was easy for Gingrich to make these criticisms because Bush is desperately unpopular in America. He's not going to alienate anybody by attacking Bush, except for that hardcore 23% of Americans who think that he's doing an okay job. And
yeah.
those are not going to vote Democratic no matter what. So it's not like he's really risking anything. And I thought to myself that it gave Fox Noise the opportunity to look as if it really is in some way fair and balanced as it always claims to be, because it was presenting Newt Gingrich slagging off on Bush, when in fact he was just making easy statements that anybody could make and get away with. But anyway, I don't mean to keep going on about Fox Noise, but I just happened to see that yesterday.
Oh, whenever you get the chance to complain about it, I think. Yeah. No, but it's funny. That's a good observation. I do think that whenever they tend to present something that isn't a left or a right wing point of view, that, yeah, it is a very, very easy statement to make.
Yeah. Oh, well. Well, I think we're going to wrap up this episode. And what I would like to do is to invite you back after the Canadian elections are concluded so that we can talk about that, the results, and maybe what that means, maybe some things that stand out in your mind. What do you think?
Yeah, no, that sounds good. We'll see if this puffin poop incident is... Have you heard about this?
I don't think so.
I should bring it up. I normally don't pay any attention to campaign gaffes because I do think they distract from real issues, and it's... I don't know, kind of trashy, but the Conservatives, when they launched an attack website on the leader of the opposition, Stéphane Dion, they had a big picture of him when you go to this website of Stéphane Dion in a puffin, which is a type of bird for anyone who doesn't know, flies overhead and basically poops on his shoulder, which people were scandalized that anyone would do this. And I think maybe to a certain extent that's legitimate. I can't imagine, for example, going to McCain's site and then having, you know, some kind of animal but take a big steaming dump on Obama or something. You know, it's just you don't see. But this was, I would say, dominating the news for quite some time, very much distracting from the issues. So it'll be interesting to see if that's still on people's minds after the election.
Oh, actually, one more thing about the Canadian election I meant to ask before. How long is the period from when the election is called until the voting is actually done? Basically, how long is the campaign?
You know, I should know this, but I don't. It's not very long. I think it's over, well, when was this called? Maybe about 3 weeks ago, and it's on October 14th. So I think it's just over a month.
Yeah, that's about right. Because one of the things that I think people in the U.S. would be envious of is that in parliamentary countries, the election campaign tends to be very short.
The campaigns that are going on, of course, like leading up to it, don't those get a lot more attention?
What, in parliamentary countries, or you mean in the U.S.?
Oh, sorry, I was talking about the U.S.
Well, yeah, I mean, the U.S. campaigns go on for... technically for at least 2 years, for presidential campaigns, probably even longer, really. But in the actual overt politicking is at least 18 months now. And certainly in New Zealand and I'm sure Canada and other parliamentary countries, the actual overt politicking with the signs and the kissing babies and so on is only a few weeks long.
Yeah, it's much, much shorter. In fact, I think by law, you're not allowed to spend money on official election campaigning, at least not with tax money. It can only be with party money if you're going to send out any party flyers promoting your party. Yeah. That can't be done until after an election is called, and it's a very limited amount of money. I would have to say in the States, wouldn't that just get exhausting, having to listen to this campaigning for so long? I mean, I'm tired of this stuff up here already. It's only been a few weeks.
Yeah. Yeah, I actually don't know how my countrymen can put up with it for so long. But, I mean, they always say that nobody in America pays attention to the presidential campaign until Labor Day of the election year, which is, beginning of September. And so they're just now paying attention. But, I mean, after such a long campaign, I would have think people would have tuned out long ago, but I don't know.
Oh, well, we'll see how it goes.
Yeah. Oh, well, I'm sure we'll be discussing some of these issues as well next time. But why don't you tell the folks about your site and how they can find you?
Oh, yeah, that thing. It's called Slap Upside the Head. It's essentially almost exclusively a site to combat homophobia in Canada mostly, although I do also focus on international stories. Not so much on things that happen in the States, I think mostly because other blogs cover that quite a bit. But if anyone's interested in that kind of thing, you could come to the site. It's www.slapupsidethehead.com. And yeah, no, I enjoy having you as readers.
And it is certainly a site that I highly recommend. I never miss a new post. As a matter of fact, I've got the RSS feed in a live bookmark, so I can always check to see when the new one is posted. So I can go right there. But I have to say that I particularly enjoyed your post the other day, the study, Gays Are Not Inherently Unhealthy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there was a news story that came out, or a study, sorry, that came out saying that, yeah, gay people are not inherently prone to AIDS and prone to mental health issues and all that as well. It's one of those things that I can't imagine why anyone would think otherwise, but there you go. Someone did a study on it.
Well, to give you a flavor of Mark's sense of humor, he has a line here that says, results are to be published in the esteemed medical journal, Dr. Obvious's Journal of Obviously Obvious Obviousness. I thought that was priceless.
Yeah. <it's, laughs> you have a quick tongue, too. I'd imagine that's hard to say.
Yeah.
I just had to write it.
Well, do visit Mark's site. I highly recommend it. And as I said, we'll try to arrange another get-together after the Canadian elections are concluded. But thanks again for joining me, Mark, and I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you later. Thanks. Bye.
You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amerinds Podcast at amerindspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, A-R-T-H-U-R, at amerindspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. listener line on 206-339-8413. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.